Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi, it's Lois. I am super excited to tell you that Fiji's memoir, Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog, is now available as an audiobook, an ebook, and as a print book. To find out more about this heartwarming story, stay tuned after the interview. I'd like to thank Hindenburg Pro for their kind sponsorship of this podcast. Hindenburg.com. It's all about the story. I apologize that the audio quality on my track on this episode isn't great. I had the wrong microphone plugged in. I promise it will return to the usual quality next time. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Strachan, and today we are chatting with Joseph Fleets, who is not only a fellow podcaster, but is joining us all the way from Texas in the USA, if I'm correct. Joseph, welcome to the podcast.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lois, for having me, for sure. Yes, indeed. I'm calling from Houston, Texas, where I'm from. Out here in the USA, but it's funny right now. I'm on the road doing my adaptive sports thing. I'm in my beat baseball season, so I'm actually out here in Indianapolis. So yeah.
So you're quite far from home this evening.
Today. This evening, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So we're going to ask you to go back to that and just talk a little bit about your adaptive sports, because I'm always curious to learn about the sports that are made accessible and are available to people. I want to take a step back and just say to you, so Joseph, who is Joseph Fleets? Tell us a little bit of who you are and your story.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on your platform. It's such an honor, and I really appreciate it. Definitely about me. My name, Joseph Fleeks. I've also go as the security of the community, because I'm really about, stepping up and speaking out for the community and being, a backbone and just kind of like letting people being the first person that they meet, because sometimes in, moving around, we're kind of like the first blind people that people get to encounter. So I like to say like that first impression kind of, helps the flow of everything. So like, that's why I call myself the security. But I am from Houston, Texas. I was not born blind. I actually ended up having a traumatic incident at the age of 16. It was caught in a terrible drive-by shooting. And so because of that, that did damage to my face and my optic nerves and everything. So that took away my sight. I don't like to say my vision, because I have plenty of vision, but my sight, unfortunately, was taken away. So I am totally blind. I do not have any light perception. Anything like that is like pretty much having a blindfold over your eyes for, for others, to understand or relate to it. So I've been this way since the age of 16, and it's been 19 years now. From Houston, Texas, I was definitely a kind of your normal, As I do that with air quotes, you know, as we like to say, you know, because my mama had me pretty much in a lot of things, in martial arts, different organized sports. I ran track. I did football, was definitely my favorite. I played basketball. I was also in different URL competitions where I did different monologues and some theater, choir. So I was pretty active. And even still, once I got into the blind community, of course, I had to adapt and find my way and get my footing and understand, you know, what type of blind individual I wanted to be and go through the different stages and emotions of it. But I ended up staying, still being active. Still, I went to the School of the Blind 6 months after my incident happened, because I was ended up shot in January 19, 2006. So I ended up at the Texas School for the Blind here that was in Austin, Texas, because each state has at least one school for the blind. So ours was in Austin, Texas. So I ended up going there for 2 years. I finished my high school career and then stayed there for what we like to call the exit program, where it gives you more skills and help you be more content with the you know, with the blindness and your, you know, your skill set. So I did that in Austin, Texas, and met a few friends out there who, you know, I like to call them my there was like, you know, my starting package, like, of me developing into the you know, the blind man that I just happened to, you know, to become. And, you know, a lot of my development of like my independent skills and moving around the city, the way I navigate, and just kind of the way I approach things, like seeing, you know, my different friends who, you know, were working, you know, had friends who were athletes that was into the different adaptive sports. Some were musicians, you know, just seeing them out doing their things and not, you know, letting the quote unquote, the disability, you know, pretty much hinder life. Like, life was still, you know, fulfilled and full and you know, and join into every, you know, every aspect that we could.
You know, I can only imagine how traumatic that must have been for you as a 16-year-old, when you're at the height of your energy and your athleticism. And it really is a very difficult time, I think, to experience something like you did.
For sure it was.
How did you cope with that adaption?
Luckily and unfortunately, I'm a stubborn individual. So, and I'm competitive in a lot of part in my life. So when it happened to me, I did feel the sadness, you know, that I'm hurt. This is changing me. But, you know, being in the ICU, having like my football coach come visit me, you know, accepting different phone calls from other different, you know, scouts that I dealt with, like that was hard and that was heartbreaking, because it's like, okay, man, my sports and things are being taken away. My friends don't, you know, really know how to, they don't want to see me this way. And to me, and being in the hospital and feeling all that to me felt like I was losing. So I told myself that I refused to lose. So I just kind of pretty much took the approach, like, this is poker. You're going to be dealt cards, and sometimes you're going to get hit with some cards that just does not work with your hand. However, you still have to play the game. You know, you just got to make the, you got to go through it and make the hands work. And, you know, eventually you're going to catch your winning hand and you're going to go on your streak. So, you know, I ended up going to the Texas School for the Blind a few months after I went through my ordeal. I spent 4 months with the hospital, 2 months in ICU and then another 2 months in rehabilitation hospital. And like I said, going through that, I told myself that I refuse to lose. So a lot of people kept telling me, like, why are you not angry? Like, you have to, you know, not angry, but why are you not really sad? Like, I really just didn't cry about it. I had my moments of frustration. Like, I noticed now that I'm older, I definitely was angry. You know, and that's where the stubbornness, that's why I say, unfortunately, because the stubbornness turned it into like an aggression, you know, competitive, like, I must do this. I refuse to do this. So if something was to go wrong, I would have a bigger rage emotion about it than I should have. But, you know, that's kind of, unfortunately, that's kind of how, for me, I pushed through it during those times.
You know, when I was doing my coaching qualification, one of the things that they brought home to us so strongly during the sessions were a strength that is overdone can be a weakness. And I, like you, I'd like to see myself as a determined person. And yeah, I often use the word stubborn as well, because I happen to think that it matches. I think it often is more stubbornness than determination, but it's grit, it's resilience, it's everything that really helps us to pull through. But there are times that I can imagine that can tip into slightly too strong an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And at least now in hindsight, it is easier to recognize that, I can imagine. You know, I see that in my own journey as well. So, but even saying that, you know, if you were able to work through and pick things up and start moving forwards a mere 6 months after this incident, 4 months of which were spent in hospital, as you've just said, that's pretty impressive, because for a lot of people, it can take up to a number of years. Of course, each person's journey is different.
Right.
Everyone's experience is different. It takes the time it is meant to take. By the time you started at the Texas School for the Blind, were you ready to move forwards and to start learning and growing the adaptive skills?
Truly was. Definitely wanted to take everything, as us Texans like to say, grab a bull by the horns and let's get the ride. And so that's pretty much what I did. Because I already knew from, you know, just being in the hospital that there really wasn't going to be any significant change as far as my sight was concerned. So it's just one of those things, you know, and like I said, I come from the sports world and the football and all that good thing. So it's like you get tackled, you don't stay down. Like, the tackle hurts, you know, it bruises, but hey, so what? Let's get up. Next play.
You're only going to get bruised more if you stay down.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I learned a lot of things as I just went through my journey. Of course, things are not perfect. That, you know, in my opinion, perfection doesn't really, it's different levels to it. So I bumped my head along the way and just learned different things that worked for me and modified and, you know, and kind of had a different type of outlet. That's why I was grateful for the adaptive sports. And, you know, that kind of helped me learn how to, you know, balance myself, and then learn that I needed more, you know, different type of support. And then I found, you know, nonprofits, organization that had like-minded, you know, beliefs and a platform kind of, you know, fit itself. And so I was able to, you know, get engaged with them and work and kind of carry further and to learn that, like, okay, I really want to heal myself even further. Like, this is beautiful, the development that I'm going through, but I need more, you know, of a deeper healing. And so, you know, I found myself going to actually reaching out and doing therapy later as more into my adult stage. And, you know, that's why now I'm really able to speak about more of my journey, more in a and free and recognizing, like, okay, at that level, you know, at the time I did not know I was as angry as I was. And I viewed it as me being stubborn and not wanting to lose, but at the, you know, that was what was the anger drove me. And so I had to learn how to kind of change that anger and accept what it is and let the acceptance of my situation and then my passion of wanting to be more than what the stereotype believes, you know, let that be what drives me and, you know, and turns me into more than, you know, a better version of myself.
Let's talk about some of your adaptive sports. As you said when you introduced yourself, you said you are currently on a trip for your adaptive sports. So what were the sports that you've been involved in?
Oh, man, I am a sports junkie. So right now, like I said, I'm currently on my beat baseball season. I current team I play for is the Indianapolis Edge. Go Edge. And then but before that, I was just out on a goal ball tournament as well. It's another sport that I'm involved with. That's been around for quite some time here in the States and whatnot. And so also, we have the blind soccer. That's my kind of like my next one that I want to get involved with. I've only really kind of tried it out at different clinics and things, but that's it's just so many sports that we have available to us. We have blind hockey. I do also adaptive running with the group back at home called Achilles, where it's tandem biking and you know, tandem running with the team and things. So it's like, you know, like I said, I've been in sports since I was five. And so I love athletics and I love being outdoors and I love like moving around and just being competitive in that way. So being able to find those things in a different stage of my life and knowing that they're modified, but still being able to get out there and just display my athletic ability. These beat baseball, for those that don't know, the way it is played, we have a ball that's just a tad bit bigger than a softball because it has a audio beeping mechanism that's built inside the circuit or whatnot. So it makes the ball a little bit bigger. So it's about a 1 pound ball that's always beeping. And the ball is pitched to us and we're swinging, you know, aluminum bats, straight aluminum bats. And then we have to, once we hit the ball, we have to run to a base that's about waistline height. And that makes a buzzing sound. And so you have to kind of train your ears to listen to these different sounds in a quick motion and being able to run full speed towards these sounds and, you know, being able to meet the mark. And so it's just been like so fun. And you have to do this before the defensive players that are out in the outfield before they track the ball with their ears and lay down and pick the ball up with their body before you hit the base. So it's like being able to display, you know, those different skills and showing that our senses are, you know, still allow us to be, you know, these type of athletes and whatnot. So it's like, it's a beautiful thing to be a part of and to be able to witness and to, like I said, to be able to display as well.
Yeah, that's my first introduction to beat baseball. So thank you for the description. Now I've got a few questions about that. So I understand that in the kind of non-adaptive form of baseball, you hit the ball. And I'm going to use a layperson's terms because I'm not a baseball player.
Gotcha.
I can imagine a number of my American listeners are going to be laughing at me because of my incorrect use of terms. I'm apologizing ahead of time. So you hit the ball and it goes out into the outfield and you then go to the first base, to second base and round the diamond. Am I correct if it's a baseball diamond?
Yes. In traditional baseball, yeah. It's a baseball diamond.
So presumably, with adaptive baseball or beep baseball?
Yeah.
Beep.
Beep. Okay. Beep.
So presumably you have multiple bases.
Mm-hmm. And no, yes, two bases.
Okay, so you go, and do they have a different buzzing sound?
No, it's just a... So the way ours go, we modified it because we really can't allow for you to run through the field because that's where the defensive players are at. So we have what we call a base operator. Once you hit the ball, they either, depending on if the ball goes to the left side of the field, then, you know, the bases are determined randomly. So they either might send you to first base or third base. We don't have a second base.
Okay. And That's quite interesting. And I like the fact that as the defensive players are moving towards the sound of the ball, you are then moving in the opposite direction to avoid potential injury.
Yeah.
That sounds makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that's beep baseball. I know we have go ball here in South Africa. I don't know how active it is, but I do have a number of friends who have played. But for those of my listeners who aren't familiar with the sport, tell us about that one.
All righty. So go ball, the way I can explain it is modified with bowling and kickball in a way. But instead of kicking the ball, we're only able to roll the ball. So we're going to, you play this on a hardwood floor. Most time it's a gym court, basketball court, inside. There's three players on the court at a time for each team. Everyone is blindfolded, just like beat baseball. Everyone who is on the field or at the plate are always blindfolded. And so we have a ball as bigger than a kickball, slightly smaller than a basketball, but they have two bells in there that jiggles every time you shake the ball.
And so,
yeah. And so the object of this game is we're trying to roll this ball as hard as we can and get it past the three players that's in front of us and get it into the net that's behind them. And they're trying to, you know, home in and lay down as quick as they can and block the ball with their body. And, you know, once they do that, then they return, throw the ball as hard as they can, you know, the opposite way and try to score into our net. So it's a quick paced game and it's just showing your different power and, you know, being able to track the ball with, you know, with the amount of sound that it provides, because that bell sometimes can stop or provide a little sound. And so it just, you know, just about being homed in and having those different skill set. And it's definitely a fun game because, like I said, it moves so quick. And when you do score, it's like it just feels good because you're like, okay, you're lined up with the player in front of you. So it's almost, even though it's two other players on the court, it almost could be like you against, you know, them. So it becomes a battle. Those balls are definitely thrown pretty hard.
And if I understand correctly, the reason for blindfolding everyone is so that everyone is playing at an equal level, rather than having some players who may have some residual sight or a slight amount of usable vision, that sight, not vision, as you pointed out, that might give them a different experience of the game.
For sure. Because there's different levels of our sight out here. Some have, you know, the limited. And so, like you said, we just want to make everything an equal playing field. Same thing for beat baseball. Same thing for the blind soccer, for what I'm understanding. Only ones who will be sighted on the court, like for, let's go back to beat baseball, for instance. On defense, we have two sighted spotters who call a zone number to just help to get the defensive players moving towards, you know, a zone so they can track the ball a lot more easier. And also just in case the defensive player come out of their zone and on a collision path with another player, they're going to, you know, yell stop. And so, no, we do have people out there that do have the sight for, you know, safety and also to help the game more be more competitive. And the difference between that and goal ball is the sighted people on the court are your referees and your coaches majority of the time, and the scorekeeper. And in blind soccer, your goalie will be the one that is able to be sighted. Everyone else that are in the field will be blindfolded.
It's absolutely fascinating because, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, yes, we have some adaptive sports. We have some adaptive recreation here in South Africa. And I think different sports are picked up in different countries. And, you know, they kind of move. I see that blind cricket is really, really popular here in South Africa, but it's really not that familiar in the USA. Another one that I've heard of recently, I interviewed a guy who's based in France, and he was talking about his love of blind tennis. So it's one of the things that I love, chatting to people from all over the world and learning what are the sports that they're involved in? How are they different from what a non-blind person might play? And yeah, what is there that we are doing uniquely in our community that is giving us the fun, the enjoyment, the competitiveness, as you say, and the exercise of that is so important in the sports arena? So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Most definitely.
Can we move across and just chat a little bit about what you feel some of the biggest issues surrounding the blindness and visually impaired or BVI community are today, both in your own country and possibly globally? Because I think there are a lot of similarities.
For sure. In my opinion, I feel it's the lack of showing our people in a success way, like having the role models. For the longest time, I can remember growing up being in elementary school, kindergarten, even going into middle school. They used to have different keynote speakers come through, like different athletes or a congresswoman or a congressman. And these would be people of, some type of prestige. And, I could just remember like, oh, man, they had a Harlem Globetrotter guy come in. I was just like, man, I want to be as athletic as this cat. Like, and this was my side of self. And so I think about this as being now a blind individual. And I tend to think back like, okay, who do they really show in our society that, like it would make a young blind person just be like, okay, ooh, like I want to do this. I'm going to be just as, good as them or even better, that it, strive for you to do even more. And, this could be, I've been trying to do more research, but truly, what I keep running back into is like, mostly on the internet, what they provide when you search something like that out here is like a Ray Charles, a Stevie Wonder, and it's just like it has to be more than that. Like we have people who are Paralympians. We have different authors out here. We still have people that are in the medical field. However, these people are not being shown. These people are not being seen. So it's like, I feel there's a lack of like the motivation of really wanting to be more or to be better, lack of word to be better than the next role model. Like I've always taught, like we teach our kids to be greater than us. So it's like, I don't feel in our blind society, we're motivating for our generation to be better than the next generation.
What's that idea? The concept of giving young children who are growing up in the BVI community, giving them something to aspire to, something to dream of that can pull them forward to achieve more than they believe is possible.
Yes,
and it maybe speaks a little bit, and I'm now talking under advisement because I don't know what the education system is like for young learners in the American situation. But the sense that I get often is that children come out of the schools and they've just been told, you are limited. You're not going to aspire to much. So you just have to cope with it. And it's kind of that really negative, limiting talk that stops people from dreaming, achieving, growing, being what they can be. And, I, like yourself, I lost my sight a little bit later in life. I was 21 when I lost my sight. And I'd already formed a lot of that part of my personality, my character. So it was more easy for me to kind of come into the the sighted world, the non-disabled world, and still say, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I will do this. But maybe for someone who's 7 years old, 10 years old, that's a really tough world to start contemplating if we're not given those role models. So there's a lot to think about there. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Other issues that you feel could make a really big difference to people living with blindness and vision impairment?
Yeah, I also feel that it starts in our household with our parents as well. Because I feel like a lot of our parents panic of like the society belief and how, you know, it could be the lack thereof and or how it views the disabled community. I feel like a lot of that panic kind of carries over to, you know, that blind individual or that child. So it's like, you know, for me, like I use myself for example. I love my mama to the death, man. I'm happy for, you know, the kind of the hardship that she made me stand up. Once we got home, you know, from the hospital and things, I had my little, you know, week off from recovery. And then, you know, next thing you know, she comes into my room. She's like, okay, son, you're not going to be laid up in here all day. We're not going to do this. Matter of fact, there's dishes that need to be cleaned. Let's come in here and wash these dishes. You know, and like, for me, that's like, cool. I love that. Like, cause she treated me, you know, okay, you have a disability. You're not less than. You're still capable of doing things or moving around. You know, you're going to have to know these things. So when you get out on your own, you know, you're not going to be dependent on anyone. You're going to have these skill sets. So I feel like a lot of parents, they don't really kind of believe in that. They feel like, you know, I need to protect my child in such a way because they have this, they're blind and whatnot. And, you know, society might swallow them up and I don't want that to happen to them, which I truly get. But however, that type of approach definitely hinders and then it creates, you know, more problems later on. And so I feel the belief also starts with the parents. You know, we have to, you know, we have to show and display the strength and, you know, and display like some, you know, some, show them that we believe in them and, you know, we see them for who they are and show them that they're capable.
I think it's incredibly hard for parents of a child who experiences sight loss because, you know, they don't know who to turn to. They don't know what is possible and what is not possible. Mm-hmm. But you are so right because it is the attitude demonstrated by the parents that so often determines what the child then picks up as possible. Mm-hmm. And it can set so many of those expectations, the judgments, the values, the self-judgments that child can experience about life, their possibilities, their opportunities. But and full respect to your mother for doing what she did, you know, thinking as a Joseph. I'm like, we're not doing this for you. You can do this. You can do it. And that is, I think it's so important. And yeah, full respect to your mother for that. And I first got to know you through the Blind Table Talk podcast. I listened to an interview that you did with Aaron on Aaron's Opinion. And as soon as I heard you and your co-host, Saida, chatting there and talking about Blind Table Talk, I just thought, these two people are incredible. I want to share in their energy, their power, the aspirations, the dreams that they're creating for others, and yeah, their interpretation and their thoughts on some of the issues that are so dominant in the blind and visually impaired community. And I've been listening to your episodes ever since. I haven't managed to listen to the most recent one yet, but it's on my phone waiting for me to listen to it. How did you get involved with Blind Tape?
You know, and I really appreciate you for the words. It's such a beautiful thing, you know, because getting into the podcast world, it was truly just about just bridging the gap and building the awareness, like giving the different communities, you know, something to just to be able to pull up and just gain some insight, you know, because we're out here. I do a lot of travel. And I constantly hear like, man, you know, I've never encountered, you know, a blind person before. I never encountered a person like you. Or I always hear, man, you don't look blind or you don't act blind. And it's just like, man, it's like, oh, my goodness. Like people are aware of, you know, other people with disability, you know, in that type of way. But unfortunately, the blind and vision impaired community is there's a lack of awareness. So we once were on the platform Clubhouse, and where we're just doing just talking around and just, you know, having these open forum conversation with other of our peers in the community. And we're just like, man, like everyone needs to kind of like see how we're, you know, interacting amongst each other and our thought process. And we was like, yo, we need to take this instead of just having this on this Clubhouse here, Blind Table Talk. You know, we really need to make this a podcast because everything is going, you know, towards the whole podcast, and the podcast is really being, you know, effective, and, you know, people are gaining the insight. So it was like, okay, why not? Let's really turn this into that. So Saida and I, you know, decided to kind of make this the Blind Table Talk podcast. And that's where we just do our different topics, you know, just about everyday life, dealing with Ubers, you know, traveling, you know, being a parent, being an athlete, a college student. Because we've been these different, you know, versions just due to the journey. So, you know, we've had these experiences, but, you know, people are not aware of that we're all out here going through our different journeys and being different versions of ourselves. And we're out here living just like they are. And so we just, you know, we kind of wanted it to be, you know, what, like we said, just bridge the gap and build the awareness to it and just giving people the insight and just seeing our perspectives. Like, it's really no different.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love the sense of community that you have in your platform, because I think it is very strongly built on the shared experience, the community. And as I say, that's a global experience. So yes, much dear. Of the conversations that you share with people who join your table and join your conversations really is things that I, all the way down in South Africa, can also relate to, and that people in other countries, I can share it with them and they can go, hey, we experienced that as well. But also to just commend you and Saida and the people involved on in the conversations, on the honesty, the openness, and the sheer courage of chatting through some of these, which are quite often quite controversial or difficult topics to talk about. And it's so refreshing to hear people being open and honest and just saying it like it is. Because, yeah, it is. While we know that as a community, we are strong, we are talented, we are capable, we are able, we have so much power. There are still some things that are chaff.
Right.
There are things that we experience on a daily basis. There are things that other people try to impose on us on a daily basis that are tough. And yeah, just having the space to hear those openly talked about is it's amazing. So thank you for doing that.
I really appreciate that. And, you know, I just want to add in there as well, You know, and that's why we like to invite people to our table to have these more of these conversations to show that it's relatable pretty much everywhere. We all go through this, like you said, globally. And, you know, if we talk about this more as a unit, then our awareness now builds globally. You know what I mean? And just like we have to, and that's why I like to call myself the security, because it's like, you know, I'm going to talk about my downfalls. I'm going to talk about, you know, what I went through, and everything wasn't pretty. It wasn't wrapped up in a beautiful bow or that beautiful baked cake. Like it was some sloppy moments. It was, you know, it was some rough times, but knowing that, like, you have to really think about, like, this is not the only thing. This is not it. And it's more to come. And, you know, you just keep moving with that, and you keep talking, and you talk with others, and you see, you know, their testimony and, you know, and how they went through it. And it's like, okay, this is what makes this so much beautiful. And this is what gives me more passion to keep, you know, continuing with the podcast and the different, you know, people like yourself and, you know, that we run into, like, and also like Aaron, like, we all out here just trying to, you know, build the awareness and show, like, hey, we're just humans who happen to have, you know, blindness, but at the end of the day, we're human.
You know, one of the things I say regularly, and I think I may have said this when I did a little, we spoke on your show as well. Difference means only difference. It does not mean inferior.
Oh, yeah.
And using different tools, using different techniques to live our lives doesn't mean that our way is any less capable, any less right. And we need to stand up for that.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So, Joseph, what else would you like to share with my audience on a different way of seeing? Because I you've got so much that you've learned and you've experienced. What would you like to share with us?
You know, I just like to say, first thing first, we all have our journey, and everyone's journey is different. But you're not alone when it comes to how we view the blindness. And so with that being said, we still have to take the accountability in ourselves, realize where you're at, and then understand that you can go to much more higher heights just by accepting and just believing and just taking that step at a time.
Powerful words. Joseph, if people would like to reach out to you, to chat to you, either online or, you know, if any, you know, social media or anything like that, where would be the best place for them to reach you?
Oh, for sure. You can reach me at joseph@blindtabletalk.com. That is the email address for the podcast as well. Also, we have our website that is blindtabletalk.com. You can join our email list. And you can reach out to me. We're constantly checking that as well. And our YouTube channel page, you can send me, you know, any comments, and feedbacks. That is Blind Table Talk. And, you know, Mr. Also the security booth that's on our YouTube channel. So, you know, those are the ways to reach out for me and to look out for what we have going on.
Are you on the socials as well?
Oh, thank you for reminding. We have our Facebook, Blind Table Talk, and yeah, I'm also on the Facebook under Blind Table Talk.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. We'll put those links into the episode notes as well so that people can access them more easily.
Awesome. Final
question. If you could give advice to a 16-year-old or a younger person who is experiencing sight loss, and was feeling very lost, feeling very overwhelmed, where do you think, what advice would you give to them of how they should move forward?
I would tell them that to know that the stage that you're in right now is not the final stage. Understand this as a movie and just be able to enjoy and learn from the different times that you're going to go through. Because like I said, at the end, this is not the final stage that you're at right now. You're going to go through many different phases. And so it's all about just really believing in yourself and understanding your position.
Thought-provoking words. Thank you, Joseph Fuchs. So this time on A Different Way of Seeing, we've been chatting with Joseph Fuchs, one of the hosts of the Blind Table Talk podcast. And we thank you, Joseph, for the time you've spent with us today, explaining a little bit about some of the adaptive sports that you are participating in and enjoying so much, and a little of your journey, sight loss, and your thoughts on challenges faced by the BVI community. It's been a real privilege to chat to you today.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you, Lois, for having me here. Big salute to everyone. Love yourself. You know, take it easy on yourself. And remember, you're not in this journey alone. It's always love.
Have you ever wondered how your dog might see the human world? Have you thought about what they might think of air travel, train travel, the fact that we so often cook our food, but seldom theirs, or the amount of clothing that we seem to wear, while they have only a single collar? Have you ever asked yourself how a guide dog is reared or trained to enable them to become the remarkable creatures that we admire so much? In Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog, you will find the answers to these and countless other questions. Pause for Thought is a heartwarming and engaging story in which you will meet Fiji, my beloved guide dog. She shares our adventures, stories about the life she lives, and how she sees the human world. Pause for Thought is now available on Audible and Amazon as an audiobook. It's available in the Kindle store on ebook, and it's available in print on Amazon for international readers and through my website, loisstrachan.com, for those readers based in South Africa. If you are a dog lover, you need to read Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog. Links to how you can find the various formats of the book are available on my website, loisstrachan.com. Just hop on to the shop and you'll find links to all of those different formats. Whether you're looking for the story as an audiobook, an ebook, or a print book, Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog is waiting for you.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you, so find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Kiasi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.